Latinos in Philadelphia make up 15% of the city's population, but only 6% of those who've gotten tested for the coronavirus. In fact, they're getting tested at the lowest rate of any racial and ethnic group in the city, despite contracting the virus at one of the highest rates. What's going on? I'm Annette John Hall. This is The Why. WHYY's health and science reporter, Nina Feldman, looked into this. She talked to a woman named Veronica Perez. She's a single mom who lives with her 5-year-old daughter, Aurora, in South Philly.
Veronica's originally from Mexico. Before the pandemic, for about the last 5 years, Veronica worked for a catering company. Veronica didn't spend a ton of time at home because she had to work really long hours, but it was all to save for Aurora's future. Aurora's sweet and cuddly and like attached to her mom's hip, and they just have a really sweet, loving relationship. Unfortunately, when the pandemic hit in March, she was laid off, at least temporarily. They told her, you know, they would hope to be able to bring her back. And so she was just at home praying that she didn't get sick.
Yo llegaba la noche y de verdad que yo pensaba que ella no iba a despertar.
When night would come, I'd think I wasn't going to wake up, that I wasn't going to see my kids again. My daughter, who's 5, who I love so much, I would think, who's going to take care of her? Her father left me with full custody, and there's no one to look after her but me. I would ask myself, how am I going to take care of her?
But in May, she had a bad headache one day. She figured it's probably just a cold, nothing to worry about. But then she got a fever.
Oh my goodness. So what did she do?
She called around to different pharmacies and hospitals, and it was really hard for her to communicate. She doesn't speak English very well, and people would answer in English, and they didn't have anybody they could pass her off to translate. Oftentimes, she understood sort of enough to know that they were saying she needed a doctor's note, or that they didn't take people who weren't already patients in their system, but every place she called was just a dead end.
Was she ever able to get tested?
Yes. She's a part of a community leadership group through Drexel called Crisol. So through Crisol, she finally was connected to Penn Medicine to get a test. She had to sort of communicate using hand signals and sign language. But I think even that was a pretty taxing experience. You know, she's got a fever, she's wearing a mask. It's a lot to ask somebody to even leave the house in that situation, let alone have to do it in a foreign language. So she got her test results in a few days, and they came back positive.
Oh, boy. How sick did she get?
She had a really severe case. She had a really high fever. She couldn't move her entire body because any slight movement would just lead to a huge coughing fit. She said she could barely make it the 15 steps to the bathroom in her apartment.
De esos 4 días, como el segundo día de que me sentía mal, yo le hablé a mi hermana y le dije.
I was talking to my sister and I told her, I feel terrible. The truth is, I was almost saying goodbye to her. I told her, I'm not going to wake up. I don't know what's going to happen because it was so hard to breathe. I couldn't breathe.
Porque es tan difícil, o sea, no poder respirar.
She was really in a bad way, and I think the worst part about it all was that, you know, she wanted to be caring for Aurora, her daughter, but her daughter had to be, you know, on the other side of the door, begging to hug her mom.
Entonces, pero pues la que más me necesitaba.
The one who needs me the most is my little girl. She's very attached to me, and she's very sweet and affectionate. She's on top of me practically all of the time. So I would have to tell her, no, don't hug me, don't come near me, go over there. And if I'd go into my room, she'd want to follow me, and I'd have to tell her, no, please stay over there.
o yo me iba al cuarto y ella iba, quería seguirme, y yo le decía, no, te tienes que quedar aquí.
And that was the hardest part was, you know, her daughter having to take care of herself. Although Veronica did say that her daughter is used to doing that because Veronica worked a lot of hours.
Y yo digo, creo que ya no me necesitas.
Sometimes I tell her, I don't think that you need me. And she'll say to me, just stay in bed, keep sleeping, because she'll get up, get dressed, do her hair, brush her teeth. I never even have to remind her to do that or anything else.
Yo le tengo que decir, lávate los dientes, o haz esto, o haz el otro.
So her daughter figured out how to get up on her own and make herself some toast and make herself some orange juice and carry on her own. But that was really hard.
Did Veronica ever go to the hospital?
No, she didn't. She never even considered it. There are a few reasons for that. One is that she doesn't have health insurance. And a lot of undocumented people don't have health insurance because if they're low income, they don't qualify for Medicaid or Medicare like somebody who is a U.S. citizen would. And a lot of people don't have private insurance offered through whatever type of work they do if they're undocumented. But Veronica also just had this fear from seeing news reports and seeing higher rates of death for Latinos from COVID-19 that...
I've always had the mindset that if I go to the hospital, I wouldn't end up leaving.
Si llego al hospital, siento que no voy a salir.
Is Veronica's experience pretty common for Latinos?
It is in the sense that Latinos have much higher rates of being uninsured than other groups. So in Philadelphia, for instance, 18% of Latinos don't have health insurance, and that's way higher than the city average of 10% of people who are uninsured. And on top of the insurance issue, listen, nobody wants to be in the hospital alone. Normally, if you're sick, you have visitors, you have people who can come and be by your side. And that's just not true for a contagious, infectious disease. I spoke to Bertha Gonzalez. She's a community health liaison for Puentes de Salud, which is a community health clinic in South Philly.
Mentally, they just have more strength to take care of themselves. They'll get better if someone is taking care of them at home than being in the hospital alone. So they can go on eating hot chicken broth or drink hot water. And this makes us feel a lot better. And I think that they think that the hospitals kill them.
And, you know, that idea that many Latino immigrants have that they might be able to take care of their family members better at home than a doctor could, well, that might be born out of an overall sense of distrust for institutions and for the government, which is in itself a result of the hostile political environment towards many Latino immigrants.
We know that a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment is coming from our current administration, but how does that connect to Latino healthcare?
There is a lot of fear from undocumented people or people who have undocumented family members or people who are here legally but are applying for citizenship status that really, really causes them to stay away from anything perceived as contact with a bureaucracy or a government agency that could be in contact with ICE or Customs and Border Patrol.
There's an incredible fear of what might happen to them if they seek health services.
This dynamic is something that I talked a lot about with Ana Martinez Donate. She's a professor of community health and prevention at Drexel University.
There's fear that immigration authorities may be alerted and that there might be consequences for them, including the potential for deportation. And it's going to increase hesitation, and sometimes just it's going to lead to avoiding health services at all costs.
And it's not just undocumented people either. There is a new policy, a Trump administration policy known as the public charge rule. Basically, what it says is anybody who's applying for citizenship that was awarded public benefits before they were a citizen, so even if, you know, they have a green card and they are on food stamps or they are a Medicaid recipient, those elements might count against them in a citizenship application. And that rule actually just went into effect earlier this month. COVID-19 testing and treatment does not count towards the public charge rule, but a lot of people don't know that, and there's been so much confusion around the policy to begin with that I think a lot of people just assumed it was in place and refrained from accessing benefits as a result.
So how big of an impact is that having?
A really big one, actually. Latinos in Philadelphia have been dramatically under-tested for COVID-19. According to U.S. Census data, Philly is more than 15% Latino, but Latinos make up only 6.2% of those who've been tested for coronavirus in the city. That said, Latinos are more at risk for getting COVID-19 for a number of reasons that have to do with, you know, living conditions and underlying health conditions and some of the aversions to the medical system that we've already talked about.
Do we know if Latinos are dying of COVID at higher rates?
In Philadelphia, Latinos over 75 have the highest death rate over any other group. I can't say why that is exactly, but based on everything I heard in this reporting, if I had to hazard a guess, I think it's not unlikely that people are really resistant to going to the hospital for a lot of reasons. And if you wait a really long time before you go to the hospital and you get sicker and sicker, by the time you go, you know, there's less that doctors can do for you.
When we come back,
that's another reason why people in the Latino community are a little bit more susceptible to contracting COVID than in some other groups, because they're more likely to live in multi-generational households.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall. I'm talking to Nina Feldman about why fewer Latinos are getting tested for COVID, despite contracting the virus at one of the highest rates in the city. If folks do get sick or get a positive test result, are they able to take off and quarantine?
For a lot of people, that's a lot harder, and that's because they have fewer workplace protections. So when Puentes de Salud started offering COVID tests back in July, it was Bertha Gonzalez's job to do outreach in the Latino community and try to make sure people knew tests were available, and she encouraged them to get tested. And she told me that one thing she heard from a lot of people was, you know, I just can't afford to be tested. I just got this job. I was just asked back to work after the shutdown.
I know a lady who had just started working and she had all of the symptoms. We told her that she needed to get tested and she said, no, I'm fine. And she was afraid because she had just started working that they would fire her, they'd throw her out. And there's a lot of people like that who've had to continue going to work.
Because undocumented people can't access unemployment benefits or food stamps or other public benefits that are designed to make it a little bit easier for people when they're out of work, undocumented people end up being way more reliant on their employers for any kind of income to support their family. And so they can't afford to necessarily say, I'm feeling sick, so that on the off chance that, you know, they didn't have paid sick leave or they were laid off, they don't have any safety net to rely on. And so what ends up happening is people just say, I have to work. I can't afford not to work. And what's the point of getting tested? Because then I just have proof that I'm sick when I was going to go to work no matter what anyway.
But nevertheless, Bertha is still trying to get the community testing despite all of these barriers, right?
She is, and I think it's really important to have somebody who speaks Spanish, that's part of the community, and who's up on all the latest coronavirus science and statistics to be doing that outreach. And for Bertha, it's even more personal for her because her family had a big COVID-19 scare. Her mother contracted the virus, and for Bertha's mother, it was easy because she does have health insurance. It took her about 5 days to get the test results back. all these other family members had been in contact with her all along. So now Bertha's in this position where she's trying to find 10 COVID tests, and she runs into some of the same issues that Veronica did, where she, you know, is calling around and can't find people who speak English and can't find someone who will take them because they don't have insurance.
Mis hermanos, mis cuñadas, mi familia y...
Para toda su familia, entonces.
My siblings, my in-laws, my family, and all of their families had been in contact with my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
It was total chaos.
Ultimately, they did find tests at Puentes de Salud.
Out of my family, 8 people came back positive. Between my sisters, in-laws, my one sister-in-law who was pregnant, and then on top of that, 3 people who'd been in contact with them as well. Thank God, nobody went to the hospital.
And that's another reason why people in the Latino community are a little bit more susceptible to contracting COVID than in some other groups, because they're more likely to live in multi-generational households. So it's really hard to socially distance from those people. And so that's just all the more reason that the testing needs to be accessible for those groups.
I'm curious about Veronica. Nina, how is she making out now?
She recovered at home. You know, she says the silver lining of all of this is that she gets to spend more time with her daughter. But just recently, Veronica got some really bad news. She had been waiting to hear back from her job, but they called her a couple of days ago and told her that they won't be needing her services anymore. You know, she's kind of at a loss. She doesn't know what she's going to do. She can't just go apply for food stamps. She can't just go apply for unemployment.
Right now, I've been paying for my expenses. I've been selling food. I mean, I've worked in the restaurant industry for so many years, so I have a lot of practice cooking. So that's what I've been doing for about 2 months now. I've been selling my food on the weekends.
Vendiendo los fines de semana comida. Entonces, con eso también he solventado mis gastos.
So she's going to try her hand at making tamales, but at the end of the day, that's a real blow. And with just the fragile safety net that a lot of undocumented people have access to, it's just a lot harder to find a way to make ends meet.
Well, Nina, thanks as always for your reporting on this.
Yeah, thanks for having me and for offering a voice to this community too.
That was WHYY Health and Science reporter Nina Feldman. The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, Sabrina Boyd-Zirka, and Malcolm Burnley, under the editorial direction of Katie Culinary. We had production help for this episode from WHYY's Elizabeth Estrada. Hit me up on Twitter at AnnetteJH. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you Thursday.